That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the ninth floor, but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and boarded my plane. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
This is Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenbloom. Let's find out who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Albert Almora.
Damn, Willie, man. Like, do we suck?
Ilo Jimenez.
Hey, you guys not going to make anyway. You guys suck. And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the suck team.
Toby!
Oh, my God, this sucks!
Random Bears fan.
As the we suck!
Turbo!
Finally made a list of somebody who thinks he sucks besides I do.
Lim Hendricks!
I wouldn't say seeking perfection, it's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swyka.
Man, that sucks.
Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck. I'll tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Wendt.
We had fun, but there you go. I sucked.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
Steve Dahl.
Disco sucks! Disco sucks!
Candace Parker.
It sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Zach LaVine.
It sucks to have it happen game one.
DeMar DeRozan.
You know, it just sucks.
Justin Fields coach Mike Tomlin.
It all sucks. There's not degrees of suck. It all sucks.
Josh Allen.
Sucks. Losing sucks. Sucks.
Bob Costas. I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage. Tyler Farrengold.
I suck, so you guys don't have to.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, boy. We're just keeping people on, keeping fellow suckageers on their toes, aren't they? By changing the opening, by changing the roll call, and keeping it a secret from me. Welcome to Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Our phone number at the Score, 312-644-6767. That'll get you to our listener line, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That number, 312-644-6767, also gets you to the Score's text line. I hope it gets me to the Score's text line sometime. All right, our guest today at 11:20, Mark Potash covers the Bears for the Sun-Times. Much to discuss. At noon, Habarkish, Score senior NFL analyst, would join me, talk Bears and draft in the NFL. See, I told you there was a lot to discuss. At 1:05, fellow suckageers who have been around a while, we're going to discuss baseball metrics, old school. And I mean old, like from my feckless youth and my... And I believe Feckless Youth opens tomorrow at Coachella, but that's not why he called. My Feckless Baseball Youth come from Stratomatic. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Bob Costas, as a matter of fact. It sprang from an interview with Chicago-born author Gary Sarnoff about the 1924 Washington Senators, because that's the romance of Stratomatic. That's the romance of baseball Stratomatic style. It occurred to me, Stratomatic was doing metrics before metrics started doing metrics and became the hot word, before Bill James, or at least before I'd heard of Bill James, before Fangraphs. And it turns out, much to my surprise, that the game that so many of us played as kids, if our text line is to be believed, Stratomatic is still there, is still available, is still making season projections. You see, in order to play the game, you needed Stratomatic to make projections for you, which is all metrics are. Probabilities. It's a dice game. So I know the season has started, but I love the idea of going back to my youth, romancing baseball Stratomatic style, and certainly, as Pedro Grifol tells everyone who will listen, and there are far fewer of those people listening to him because he says some of the dumbest things, but he says it's a long season. And so John Garcia, the chief content officer of Stratomatic, will join me after one and tell us if Stratomatic has the Cubs winning it all and if the Sox are going to be losing it all and then moving out of town. Also today, I hope to call to order a Wake and Bake Club meeting because I'm wearing my new Snoop Dogg sweatshirt that my otter bought me. And there's Snoop news. See, right, Tyler? You can see Snoop Dogg. Yeah, it's Snoop. Snoop's on the Mount. He's on the Mount Kushner, Cushmore of Wake and Bake Club.
Smoke weed every day.
So there's Snoop, Cheech, Chong. And who would you think is the fourth one, Tyler? Who's the fourth stoner on Mount Kushmore for the Wake and Bake Club?
It's tough. It's a tough call. I give up.
Willie Nelson. Come on. I also hope to bring you some cultural zeitgeist items. At about 1:40 or so, I will tell you the best thing I saw this week. I am doing it exactly, precisely, specifically in the last segment, the one before I get out of here at 2. I'm not doing it any earlier because I don't know if I will make it through that segment. I don't know if I'll make it through that story. And even if I did, I'd be cried out and I wouldn't be able to finish the show. Now, the Suckage Buffet. What was your favorite earned run of the Jose Cuas era? Anybody? Somebody? Anybody? While you were sleeping, they sent him away. And while you were sleeping, so were the Cubs. Bryce Miller put their bats to bed in a 4-2 Mariners win where Jordan Wicks was not good enough. For all this talk about swing and miss stuff, he missed home plate a lot. There were a lot of walks, a high pitch count. He lasted just 4 innings, tied a career high with 4 walks. Hit a batter for the first time in his major league career. And it came with the bases loaded. And it came with the bases loaded and 2 out. Oy. Michael Bush homered. Great. That's wonderful to see. But by then it was 4-1 and nobody was on base because nobody was on most of the night. Shota goes tonight against somebody I've never heard of. Emerson Hancock, a 6'4", 213-pound right-hander who has an ERA of 11.42. He has an OPS of 1.124. Cubs better hit this guy, or the next Cubs giveaway will be Xanax. There'll be a Xanax day for them. The Bulls beat the Dog Breath Wizards and with their scrubs, 129-127 on Friday night. Caruso, DeRozan, Vooch didn't play. This was because the Bulls secured Arturas Karnišević's beloved ninth spot in the East, which is not a playoff spot, but competitive, competitive, competitive. Oh, competitive like you wouldn't believe. And most of us can't believe he's still getting paid to do this job, AK is. Anyway, as Casey Johnson tweeted, come for the load management, stay for the endearing quotes from the two-way contract guys who took advantage of an opportunity in a big way. Ndamukong Suneogo went for 22 and 20, which might be as good as he is, but it's certainly as bad as the Wizards are. Javonte Green went all Javonte Green the way he's been doing it, and Henry Drell. Or is it Henri? You know what? I don't know. I've never heard of this guy. Henri, but he spells it like Henri Richard. Henri Drell hit his first NBA three and delivered a highlight reel block. Then he delivered a quote just as spectacular, reading from Casey's piece of five observations, because it was load management, so he only did five instead of 10. Quote, Drell said, "I always jump. I'll tell you that. I've gotten posterized in my life badly, but I still jump, and I promise you I'll keep jumping. I'm from Estonia. Even if I'll be on ESPN, nobody will know me, so I will still jump. And I was trying to time that one, and it went right. I'm from Estonia." That's a sweatshirt, isn't it? Bulls close the regular season Sunday against the Knicks. You'll hear it here. They have a chance to match last season's embarrassing and unacceptable record. And then it happens, he says in his big broadcaster voice. The Bulls face the Hawks in the Bulls Super Bowl on Wednesday at the United Center. This is what interim White Sox GM Chris Getz said Friday afternoon. Quote, "From a big picture standpoint, I want to feel like we're on the right track. And that gives me plenty of confidence and calms me through the ups and downs that can be given to you during the baseball season." Then Getz says, White Sox got their brains beaten in 11-1 by a Reds team that plays, dare we say, fast. They look fast out there, unlike the baseball-challenged White Sox. As noted by the Sox machine's James Fegan, Sox hitters reached base four times on the evening, whereas the Reds had five straight batters reach with two outs in the third inning. Oh, man. Sox fell to 2-11. Starter Chris Flexen, a perfect 0-3, allowed six runs over 2 2/3 innings to raise his ERA to 8.78. Sox pitchers issued 9 walks. And then there was this tremendous, precious, spectacularly White Sox moment as captured by Aloha Mr. Hand. If you're here and I'm here, isn't this our time? Anyways, the tweet from Aloha Mr. Hand, whose Twitter bio assures us he's a man of questionable character, a five-time Sox math winner, an associate from the 108, which means I guess he drinks a lot. Isn't that how the 108 works? Right? So here's the tweet. "This is not a joke. Ellie De La Cruz crushes one into the seats, and the White Sox decide to flash, quote, better at the ballpark on the scoreboard." Yes, it is. For the Reds. Hashtag White Sox is as White Sox does. Hashtag better at the ballpark.
Hashtag White Sox.
Yeah, there you go. And Getz tells you he wants to feel like they're on the right track. That gives him confidence. So there you go. If you wondered why Pedro Grifol says so many dumb things, it starts at the top. By the way, Getz gave updates on the injured Yoan Moncada, injured Louis Robert, injured Eloy Jimenez. So after further evaluation, Moncada should be available to get hurt again shortly after the All-Star break. And after more evaluation, Robert could make himself ready for another injury in 6 weeks. Eloy's next chance at getting hurt is his next ground ball up the middle. The positive today, yes, there are positives. Garrett Crochet pitches. But the bigger positive is this. We're one day closer to the chairman selling the team. And if you don't know how big that is, you should go read that story in the Sun-Times about who's backing Related Midwest. And if you want to feel dirty all over, if you want to feel dirty all over, read that story about the previously imprisoned billionaire behind the Related Midwest and all the pretty shiny stadium pictures. And then remember The White Sox will be bringing up Mike Clevinger soon. There is no antibiotic strong enough to inoculate you from the White Sox. Your next chance to see Connor Bedard score is Sunday against Teuvo Teravainen and the Hurricanes. Teuvo is still only 29. Swoon. The Bears are going to begin off-season team activities on Monday, I believe, with Tyson Bagent as QB1. Just thought I think I have that right. I will ask my first guest, Mark Potash of the Sun-Times, about that. And we'll talk Bears draft plans. Next on Saturday, Suckage, the linchpin of Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's Chicago. And this is Chicago. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. And listen to this. Draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. So, yeah, seems like a good time to talk Bears. I hear they're on the clock. Now, I'm trying to run down that rumor, trying to confirm it, trying to get a second source. Maybe my guest on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois will help me out. He's Mark Potash of the Sun-Times. Potsy, thanks for joining me today. I hear a rumor the Bears are on the clock. Can you confirm?
Well, they have been on the clock for longer than you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't often mean it. It doesn't often mean something. And here we are at the most important draft in Bears history. Is that too much to say? Have you written that already?
I don't think I've written that, but I guess when I first hear that, I always think, you know, just because I've been around so long that, well, that can't possibly be. But the more I think about it, at this point in time, considering where the Bears are, the last, you know, four playoff victories in the last 31 seasons, never more than, you know, two winning seasons in a row. And with the opportunity they have and the situation, I agree. I think it is. I think if you consider the objective to sustain, to establish some kind of sustained success that they haven't had since Ditka and the opportunity that they have here to do that, I think absolutely this is, at least for the modern era, the most important, biggest opportunity for the Bears that they've had.
And the quarterback production pukage, that's the connecting the dots part of it throughout the whole thing. They're expected to take a quarterback with number one. And I love the idea that the most important draft coming up as we speak, I believe they open OTAs on Monday and QB1 is Tyson Bagent. Do I have that right?
Nothing would surprise me.
That's a voice of experience, ladies and gentlemen, fellow Suckageers. This is a man who knows.
It's almost like, you know, when you're as old as I am, you almost catch yourself. You just don't want to be optimistic. So it's like too good to be true, right?
Yeah. The pick that gets the most talk, because Caleb Williams seems like a gimme and it's been made and they're just sitting there, other reports of the Commanders were rebuffed and there's only been one quarterback with the 30 visit, and that would be Caleb Williams. So the number 9 pick, much discussion if, say, Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers or one of the top 3 receivers drops there, and that would have to be the choice. Do you believe that? Do you think that? Or do you believe Ryan Poles goes for the not need, but the bluest player he has on his board because they need stars?
Well, that's a really interesting question because I think that they should do that. I've always said that my first thought when they signed Keenan Allen was, I hope that doesn't take them out of the running for a wide receiver at 9. Or even in the first round, one of those top 3 guys. But we really don't know. They may be thinking totally different, and he might be thinking that after signing Keenan Allen and figuring that he's going to sign him to an extension, that that's not as much of a need as everyone else thinks. And I would be in favor. I've been saying that now for a while. You know, if they can't get Joe Alt, a really automatic upgrade at tackle. Which, you know, at 9, they almost certainly would not be able to. If they can't do that, I really would like to see them really shore up the wide receiver position, give that quarterback the absolute best chance to succeed, and go there. But my point is, the Bears in their internal discussions may already be like not even thinking that. They may think we're good. We're going to trade. If we're going to trade down, unless something crazy happens, and that's really where the intrigue of this draft is. Not number 1. It's at number 9, and what they do with that pick.
There's a guy named Joe Marino who does the Locked On Bills casts, and they're the team that just traded Stephon Diggs to the Texans. And he made this list, 10 highest paid NFL wide receivers, meaning average per year, and where they were selected in the draft. Top is Tyreek Hill, taken in the 5th round. Second is Davante Adams, taken in the 2nd round. On this list, you can see where it's going. There is one in the top 10. There's one first round pick, Calvin Ridley, who this guy, based on money, ranks him. Ridley ranks 8th, taken with a 26th pick overall in the first round. And there are quite a few second rounders. So for the eagerness to grab one of these receivers, it seems like there's a preponderance of talent in the 2nd round later on in the draft. What do you think when you hear something like that, see something like that, what do you need to factor in? What's the context?
Well, the context is that all those guys in the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th round, almost all of them had great quarterbacks, and that's what made them good. And that's the X factor. That's why those guys are there. The guys in the first round, now Ja'Marr Chase went to Joe Burrow. He will be on that top 10 paid list pretty soon, mm-hmm. but that's an example of a first rounder who went to a good quarterback and is maxing out. So I think a lot of wide receiver success is based on the quarterback, and that's really, again, the intrigue of this, that the Bears finally have that kind of quarterback, but they also have an opportunity to get the wide receiver. Also, the teams with the good quarterbacks are often lower in the draft or don't feel those needs. Look at the Packers. They never took a first rounder because they leaned so much on Aaron Rodgers to take to turn second rounders and third rounders into first rounders, they didn't feel the need to. So I think that's why that stat, I mean, I don't doubt it, and it will change once the first rounders get paid next year. But I think the reason for that is because of the quarterback factor. And again, it's for the Bears, it's kind of a big X factor, is if they finally get the quarterback in Caleb Williams, who can be that guy. Yeah, 9, a guy at 9 will help, but I cannot argue against the fact that, yeah, you can make your own Davante Adams now. Now you've got the quarterback to do that. So I wouldn't argue with that thinking either.
Mark Potash is my guest. He covers the Bears for the Sun Times. The Bears reportedly are on the clock, or actually have been since Jim McMahon, since Charles Martin javelin through Jim McMahon into the ground. That's where it's all gone. So the most important position in interim coach Matt Eberflus's defense is either filled or not filled. I don't know how you feel about that. I was very encouraged. I compared Jervon Dexter's numbers in the second half of the year with Jalen Carter's numbers. Jalen Carter was the guy who might have gone number 1 overall to the Bears, might have gone number 9 to the Bears. They ran away from that, and then Second half of the year, Jerron Dexter had more sacks, and his numbers were comparable or exceeded Jalen Carter, who was supposed to be all that. And I don't know if you believe there is a natural progression of what we can expect there. There does not seem to be, there was no free agent frenzy for that guy to fill that spot in Eberflus's defense. Where are you on what remains a question mark in the most important position in the coach's defense?
Well, first of all, I think that the Dexter Carter comparison, you got to kind of put that on hold because, Jalen Carter wasn't quite as good as people thought he would be in that defense. But one reason was because that defense took a step back when people thought that it would at least sustain what it did. And also, Carter just still has a higher ceiling than any DT in that draft. So hold on that. Jerron Dexter, I was encouraged by that because not only did he get better, but he got better as the defense got better. And this defense should, if they stay healthy, will continue to get better. I think that's where your answer is. In fact, that's kind of the point of this. The Bears only have 4 picks, but they've had 21 picks in the previous 2 years. And guys like Jerron Dexter have to be your areas where you get growth from within. He's a guy who has to step up and fill those holes so that you don't have to keep trading in this draft to acquire more picks for more shots at finding that guy. You've got to have the confidence that in guys like Dexter or Tyreek Stevenson, Braxton Jones, maybe Brisker Gore, all these guys you've drafted, you've got to have faith that they're going to develop as you grow. And on defense, you see all the signs that they will do that. So I like Dexter. I'm not sure exactly what his ceiling is. But I do know in a really good defense, just like we've seen with all good defenses the Bears have had, there's always players who rise to kind of a Pro Bowl level, whether they get that recognition or not. And he's definitely in that category. So I would ride with that based on what I've seen so far.
Why do you think Joe Alt, with no pro experience, is better at an immediate upgrade at left tackle over Braxton Jones, who has pro experience, good, bad, but he certainly has experience?
Yeah, I'm not a draft expert. I kind of read. I try to base my opinion on what scouts are saying and the experts are saying. And everything I've heard about Joe Alt is that he's going to be an immediate Pro Bowl caliber player in the league. So I'm just basing it on the history of scouting and that they've been right on those. And that there is a difference between guys. I guess a good example would be like in 2018, there's a difference between the best offensive tackle in the draft and a guy like Joe Alt. A guy like Mike McGlinchey, like in 18, was the best offensive tackle in the draft, but he was not considered of a Joe Alt type of difference maker, and the Bears made the right pick when they could have had a shot at McGlinchey, and they took Roquan Smith. This year it's different. I'm just basing it on what I've read about scouts and what I know about the accuracy of scouting reports and what I see. And Joe Alt just sounds like a guy who I think will be one of those plug and play perennial Pro Bowl type guys. And if there's anywhere these guys have been pretty accurate in the draft, I'd say offensive tackle is one of those positions. So I'm just trusting that. And so that's why I say if they can upgrade there. That would be one spot they'd want to. I will say, from what I've seen from Braxton Jones, the Bears can win a Super Bowl the way he's going. The Bears can win a Super Bowl with him at left tackle. I think that's true, but they have to have a lot more around him than they have, and they're heading in that direction. So I think that I just feel like that's a luxury that they have a starter, but the upgrade is so significant. Braxton Jones is kind of like the Justin Fields of tackles. He's a guy who's good and he's good enough. You can live with him. You can win with him. You can make the playoffs with him. You can win a Super Bowl with him. But you got to have an awful lot around him to make it happen. And if you have a chance to upgrade, you do it, which is exactly what they did at quarterback. It doesn't mean the starter is a bad player and won't be a good player in the league. But if you can get better at all positions, it's a cliche that's true. If you can get better, you do that. And that's one position where I feel it would be worth it to get to upgrade a position that you kind of already have filled.
Mark Potash is my guest. He covers the Bears for the Sun-Times. As long as you invoke Justin Fields' name, I'm not convinced they could win a Super Bowl or anybody can win a Super Bowl with them. And I think the world of Mike Tomlin. I just don't think so. Because I think he's a ball security nightmare between fumbles and interceptions. And Caleb Williams happens to be, I heard a stat, Dane Brugler was on with on the Bernstein Holmes and along with Layla when they were broadcasting at the end of the week from Circus Sports Las Vegas, that Williams threw 199 passes on third and fourth down and none was an interception. I thought that was stunning. But he fumbles. He is a ball security nightmare. And fumbles for a quarterback, especially a young quarterback, are like errors by a young shortstop. I mean, even Derek Jeter made 30 errors and whatever. You just see those guys do that. I don't know how you... I don't know what the arc is for that, but how do you reckon his ball security questions with a guy who's going to have the ball in his hand every snap?
Well, I think those are legitimate questions. I think with the Bears, that's one of the things, that's one of the trickier parts of scouting the Bears, I feel, have already done, is trying to figure out how quickly will he learn. And, you know, guys like Derek Jeter and Peyton Manning, who led the league in interceptions in 1 year, they learn quickly. And I think that's one of the things, the abstract parts of the interview process is trying to find out how quickly will guys learn from their mistakes. Justin Fields really didn't do that. He didn't learn as well. And he was having the same errors in year three as in year one. And I think that's why they made that decision. But also you got to remember, I think the timing is also one of the themes of the whole Caleb Williams thing is just the as opposed to Justin Fields is the timing of it. He's coming in when the Bears are getting better at all phases. The Bears should be a better pass protection team. So he's not going to be putting himself in positions where he's got to, oh, should I get rid of it? Not, oh, I guess I got hit and I fumbled. Like Justin Fields, he won't be in as many of those situations as Fields. Theoretically, he won't be. If it goes as planned, I think that's part of the plan as well. He will not be in as many situations where he will make those mistakes. I think that's part of it.
All right, I will look forward to that, Mark. I appreciate your time. Thanks for taking time out on Shabbat to join me today and talk Bears football. And boy, I wish the draft would hurry up and get here. I bet you do too.
I do. I absolutely do. But you know, from considering that the Bears got this pick in like December. We're almost there. So it's like I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So it's like almost over.
Walk to the light. Isn't that what they tell you? All right.
Yep.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Steve. Talk to you later.
Mark Potash of the Sun-Time. That was... Okay, that's it. We're still working to confirm the Bears are on the clock. There was... I got some other stuff. You know, we've... In the history of Saturday Suckage and other Saturday shows that I've worked on, we had quite the history of Little League stuff. And there's a couple things I wanted to mention that struck me this week, and maybe it'll strike you too, and I'll share it with you. Hub Arkish will be here, talk more Bears at the top of the hour, NFL draft and the Bears and all that stuff. This is Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Top of the hour, Hub Arkish will join me. We'll talk Bears, NFL draft, who goes where, how, all that stuff. Top of the 1 o'clock hour, we'll talk with John Garcia, Chief Content Officer of Stratomatic. When I mentioned that about a half hour ago, that we would talk some Stratomatic, we've done that before, and it's elicited a wonderful response. Somebody texted in, where is it? 224, my buddy is in a Stratomatic league. There you go. And somebody had the Stratomatic cards from 72, 73, and 74. Of course you did. So we'll talk to John about that. And next hour we have a meeting of the Wake and Bake Club. We had people immediately texting in ideas on who the fourth face on Mount Cushmore was. The Tyler didn't know. Couldn't even come up with a guess, Tyler Farrengold. But Chris Bogosian of my former Chicago Tribune thought it should be Spicoli. Nice try, but you don't get to advance to the bonus round. I'll have some other answers and a lot of Snoop news. When the Score studios, when we were on a different floor, One of the people doing a remote from our studios was CJ Nitkowski. Do you remember that name, Tyler? You ever heard of CJ Nitkowski?
Can't recall.
Mostly from the Tigers. He pitched in the majors for 10 years for 8 different teams. The Tigers, the Rangers, the Mets, the Braves, the Nationals, the Reds, the Yankees, and the Astros. 8 teams, 10 years. And a great sense of humor. This week, he retweeted something that his wife said. Their son had a bad outing in a Little League game. Nitkowski's wife said, "You're lucky you still get to live in this house. When Dad pitched bad, we had to move." I love that. He retweeted, CJ Nitkowski retweeted it. Speaking of Little League, Stratomatic, Little League, I love all that. This is what we always, on Saturday Suckers, all the Saturday shows, we always had a lot of parents driving their kids to and from Little League games. We would hear from them because there were times where the discussion out of nowhere turned to Little League, turned to Little League parents. We've been a place where Little League parents have spent time. We've had some serious talks on this, in these Saturdays, about Little League parents. I don't know if they're still as bad as they were, as they used to be. I don't go to Little League games anymore. Do you play Little League baseball, Tyler?
What age do you consider being Little League? Because I started playing when I was 7.
Right. Well, that's fine. I mean, when it's 6 or 7 and you play up through however long you play up through, you're a Little League parent. Is still can be a high school parent who just won't shut up and just goes crazy and is that kind of. So you started when you were 7.
Yeah, I started when I was 7 and then stopped when I was in 8th grade. So 13 years old.
So were there a lot of, was there a lot of screaming at umpires?
Oh yeah. Lots.
Yeah. That's the worst thing about Little League parents. And there's a lot of times where if you're at, say, a 8-year-old level, the umpires might be 9 or 10. They're just getting experience. And parents feel the need to yell at a 10-year-old kid. At least they did before. I don't know if they still do now. But I heard a story. I don't know if they're doing it this year, but this came from, I love what a New Jersey Little League organization did last year. I hadn't known about it until Joey Ice, the former Frozen guy for my Trader Joe's, he told me about it because he saw it on gas station TV. No kidding. GSTV. The place for your cultural touchstones. Anyway, this New Jersey organization declared that if parents yell at umpires, they have to become an umpire for 3 games before they can go back to their kids' team. I'll repeat that. If a parent yells at an umpire, and this, any umpire, it's not just the 10-year-olds or 12-year-olds doing 10-year-old games. Parents have to leave and go umpire for 3 games before they're allowed back to watch their own kid. I think that's tremendous. I've not heard of that happening around here. It absolutely should. If you open your mouth to an umpire at whatever age, you have to leave and you cannot come back until you've umpired 3 games.
Kind of putting you in that same spot, seeing, like, you know, how would you react if you made a bad call and another parent would yell at you? You probably wouldn't like it.
Exactly right. One other item, which has nothing to do with Little League, but it's just sort of in, it was on my mind this week because OJ Simpson died. Now, famous for a football career and 2,000 yards in 14 games and famous murderer, Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. So he died of cancer. He was 76. He, you know, tragic, but spectacular in NFL terms. I never met OJ. Of all the people, I never met him. But he played a part in a week I will never forget. It was on a Sunday. I believe it was Sunday the 12th in 1994. Until he died, I hadn't realized we're 30 years. This is the 30th anniversary come June of everything that happened. So I was writing for the Sun-Times, and it was the Western Open. And I think Ernie Els won it. I think that was the story. I get home, and my mom says, Steve, I was born and raised in L.A. My mom and dad were still out there. I'm in Chicago. Steve, you need to come home. This may be it for your dad. Wait, how did I just find out about this? Steve, you need to come home. So I took a late flight, got in. My best friend picked me up. We come into the house. And I see my father is so gone, so demented. I don't know what it was called, but it's where you're, and maybe, unfortunately, people listening have seen their parents go through this, where you're picking at the bedding. Pick at the bedding and mumbling incoherently. And it's like, this didn't just happen this weekend, Mom. But my mom is the kind of woman who would say, yeah, I didn't want to tell you when this started 6 months ago because I didn't want to worry you. That kind of thing. So that's Sunday into Monday. I see my father in what seems to be the death throes. I go to sleep. I wake up Monday morning. My mom's watching the local news shows the way we have here. And they are reporting on a double murder in the Westwood area and San Vicente. And so O.J. Simpson's ex-wife and another unnamed person at the time, and there's blood everywhere. Really? Oh, okay. Tuesday, I wake up to the news that Ryan Sandberg retired. He had done that on Monday. I had not seen that. We didn't have the tweeter machine at that. Oh, my God. There he is. And he's quitting baseball and quitting the Cubs. Wednesday, I wake up and my dad is dead. And I think that's the day that OJ needed a whole bunch of lawyers. Friday, we bury my father. 2 days later. Friday evening, we hold a shiva. People are at the house. And then everything stops. Because my dad's shiva was interrupted by a white Bronco chase down the LA freeways with helicopters everywhere. And it finally came to rest in the west side on the Westwood area. And Sunday that week was Father's Day. I never met OJ, but I sure had experiences with him. We take a break. When I come back, talk with Hub Arkers, talk some Bears draft. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Thank you for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Top of the hour, Hub Arkers will join me. We'll talk Bears, NFL draft, who goes where, how, all that stuff. Top of the 1 o'clock hour, we'll talk with John Garcia, Chief Content Officer of Stratomatic. When I mentioned that about a half hour ago, that we would talk some Stratomatic, we've done that before, and it's elicited a wonderful response. Somebody texted in, where is it? 224. My buddy is in a Stratomatic league. There you go. And somebody had the Stratomatic cards from 72, 73, and 74. Of course you did. So we'll talk to John about that. And next hour we have a meeting of the Wake and Bake Club. We had people immediately texting in ideas on who the fourth face on Mount Cushmore was. The Tyler didn't know. Couldn't even come up with a guess, Tyler Farengol. But Chris Bogosian of my former Chicago Tribune thought it should be Spicoli. Nice try. But you don't get to advance to the bonus round. I'll have some other answers and a lot of Snoop news. When the Score studios, when we were on a different floor, One of the people doing a remote from our studios was CJ Nitkowski. Do you remember that name, Tyler? You ever heard of CJ Nitkowski?
Can't recall.
Mostly from the Tigers. He pitched in the majors for 10 years for 8 different teams. The Tigers, the Rangers, the Mets, the Braves, the Nationals, the Reds, the Yankees, and the Astros. 8 teams, 10 years. And a great sense of humor. This week, he retweeted something that his wife said. Their son had a bad outing in a Little League game. Nitkowski's wife said, "You're lucky you still get to live in this house. When Dad pitched bad, we had to move." I love that. He retweeted, CJ Nitkowski retweeted it. Speaking of Little League, Stratomatic, Little League, I love all that. This is what we always, on Saturday Suckage, all the Saturday shows, we always had a lot of parents driving their kids to and from Little League games. We would hear from them because there were times where the discussion out of nowhere turned to Little League, turned to Little League parents. We've been a place where Little League parents have spent time. We've had some serious talks on this in these Saturdays about Little League parents. I don't know if they're still as bad as they were, as they used to be. I don't go to Little League games anymore. Do you play Little League baseball, Tyler?
What age do you consider being Little League? Because I started playing when I was 7.
Right. Well, that's fine. I mean, when it's 6 or 7 and you play up through however long you play up through, you're a Little League parent is still can be a high school parent who just won't shut up and just goes crazy and is that kind of. So you okay. started when you were 7.
Yeah, I started when I was 7 and then stopped when I was in 8th grade. So 13 years old.
So were there a lot of. Was there a lot of screaming at umpires?
Oh, yeah. That's, lots.
Yeah. That's the worst thing about Little League parents. And there's a lot of times where if you're at, say, a 8-year-old level, the umpires might be 9 or 10. They're just getting kids getting experience. And parents feel the need to yell at a 10-year-old kid. At least they did before. I don't know if they still do now. But I heard a story. I don't know if they're doing it this year, but this came from I love what a New Jersey Little League organization did last year. I hadn't known about it until Joey Ice, the former Frozen guy for my Trader Joe's, he told me about it because he saw it on gas station TV. No kidding. GSTV. The place for your cultural touchstones. Anyway, this New Jersey organization declared that if parents yell at umpires, they have to become an umpire for 3 games before they can go back to their kid's team. I'll repeat that. If a parent yells at an umpire, and this any umpire, it's not just the 10-year-olds or 12-year-olds doing 10-year-old games. Parents have to leave and go umpire for 3 games before they're allowed back to watch their own kid. I think that's tremendous. I've not heard of that happening around here. It absolutely should. If you open your mouth to an umpire at whatever age, you have to leave and you cannot come back until you've umpired 3 games.
Kind of putting you in that same spot, seeing like, you know, how would you react if you made a bad call and another parent would yell at you? You probably wouldn't like it.
Exactly right. Exactly right. One other item, which has nothing to do with Little League, but it's just sort of in, it was on my mind this week because O.J. Simpson died. Now, famous for a football career and 2,000 yards in 14 games and famous murderer, Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. So he died of cancer. He was 76. He, you know, tragic, but spectacular in NFL terms. I never met OJ. Of all the people, I never met him. But he played a part in a week I will never forget. It was on a Sunday. I believe it was Sunday the 12th in 1994. Until he died, I hadn't realized we're 30 years. This is the 30th anniversary come June of everything that happened. So I was writing for the Sun-Times, and it was the Western Open. And I think Ernie Els won it. I think that was the story. I get home, and my mom says, Steve, I was born and raised in L.A. My mom and dad were still out there. I'm in Chicago. Steve, you need to come home. This may be it for your dad. Wait, how did I just find out about this? Steve, you need to come home. So I took a late flight, got in. My best friend picked me up. We come into the house. And I see my father is so gone, so demented. I don't know what it was called, but it's where you're, and maybe, unfortunately, people listening have seen their parents go through this, where you're picking at the bedding, pick at the bedding and mumbling incoherently. And it's like, this didn't just happen this weekend, Mom, but my mom is the kind of woman who would say, yeah, I didn't want to tell you when this started 6 months ago because I didn't want to worry you. That kind of thing. So that's Sunday into Monday. I see my father in what seems to be the death throes. I go to sleep. I wake up Monday morning. My mom's watching the local news shows the way we have here. And they are reporting on a double murder in the Westwood area and San Vicente and so O.J. Simpson's ex-wife and another unnamed person at the time, and there's blood everywhere. Really? Oh, okay. Tuesday, I wake up to the news that Ryan Sandberg retired. He had done that on Monday. I had not seen that. We didn't have the tweeter machine at that. Oh, my God. There he is, and he's quitting baseball and quitting the Cubs. Wednesday, I wake up and my dad is dead. And I think that's the day that OJ needed a whole bunch of lawyers. Friday, we bury my father. 2 days later. Friday evening, we hold a Shiva. People are at the house. And then everything stops. Because my dad's Shiva was interrupted by a white Bronco chase down the LA freeways with helicopters everywhere, and it finally came to rest in the west side on the Westwood area. And Sunday that week was Father's Day. I never met OJ, but I sure had experiences with him. We take a break. When I come back, talk with Hub Arkers, talk some Bears draft. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Thank you for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.